fortunate to have three very distinguished guests here today. Hopefully you have met or had the chance to meet or will have the chance to meet our three guests. From Blankenship CPA Group, we have Steve Parker, Paul England, and Lauren Allen. All three have lots of experience advising clients just like you all, both individually, small businesses and large companies, and even some nonprofits. So about a month or so ago, there were several of us at Pinnacle that sat in on a meeting that was just for our financial advisors, and we had a speaker came in and talked to us about some of the things that you all as our clients would be facing as with all the tax law changes. And we had some conversation and thought this was really good information to pass along and try to do a workshop around. And so I immediately came back to the office and sent Steve an email and just said, hey, would you all be willing to do this? And so thankfully they've agreed to come and share their perspective on all of the tax law changes that will impact almost all of us this year. So hopefully lunch has been good. Hopefully you've maybe seen some few friends or maybe made some new ones. And so now I will turn it over to Steve as we get our program started.
Thank you, Brian. I am delighted to be here, as are my colleagues. Paul is a senior tax manager with us. Lauren is a senior manager. She does both audit and tax. And it's a real pleasure to be with you today. Thank you, Brian, for inviting us. And thank you, Pinnacle Bank, for having this event and for the good lunch. Let's give Pinnacle a hand. So we're here to talk about taxes, and in particular, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was passed right before the first of the year. Before we talk about it, there's no need to read this. What it says is that our advice is general, and don't go do anything crazy without talking to your own tax advisor. So we will give general information. We'll be as specific as we can, but your situation needs to be discussed with a professional before you make any wild and crazy moves. The purpose on the front page of the bill says that it amends the Internal Revenue Code to reduce tax rates and modify policies, credits, and deductions for individuals and businesses. I'm not sure where to broaden the tax base came from, because it really doesn't broaden the tax base. It eliminates a lot of taxpayers at the lower end of the scale. So the base is not broadened in that more people are paying taxes. The Act made changes to individuals. There were some changes for tax exempts. We're not going to really go into those today because they have very limited, they apply to very few tax exempt organizations. But the individual changes are temporary. Most of them expire at the end of 2025. So my part in the program is to talk to you about individual changes. And if you like them, you should do them soon, because they are, unless the law has changed, they will go away at the end of 2025. The corporate changes are permanent. The 21% tax rate does not expire. And the pass-through entity changes, they're also temporary, expiring at the end of 2025. So the tax cuts are cuts. There were seven brackets before. There are seven brackets now. Brackets really don't mean that much to us, whether they're seven or three or two, except when you apply that tax rate to the amounts underneath. There were seven before, there are seven now, but they apply to different amounts. For instance, the 24% bracket now applies to amounts over $315,000. That's a big increase over what the 25% bracket applied to. So if you're in, I just make that point to you. I'm not going to tell you all the brackets because it gets jumbled. But there are areas where there's a tax cut, even though it doesn't look like much of a tax cut. From 28% to 24% is a 4% cut, but the bracket is greatly expanded. So the amount of income in that bracket that's taxed at a lower rate is significant. I think that's really fun, but y'all probably don't much care about that. The actual brackets, this is for individuals. I'll show you the married filing joint brackets. There's still a 10% bracket on the first $19,050 of taxable income. We have graduated rates as we had before, and then it goes to 12% up to $77,000, 22% up to $165,000, 24% up to $315,000, and so on. If you make over six, if you have taxable income over $600,000, the tax rate is 37%. It was 39.6% before. So in every income level, there is a reduction in rate. An important thing to keep in mind is that most of you, most of us, have tried to get out of these ordinary income rates and have our income taxed at capital gains, especially in our investments, because capital gains under the old law were always taxed at a lower rate than ordinary income. The good news is that the new law keeps that preference for long-term capital gains. There's a 0%, it's not only long-term capital gains, it's also qualified dividends. So the dividends have already been taxed once at the corporate level. There's a 0% rate on capital gains if they don't cause your total income to go over $77,400. There's no tax on qualified dividends or long-term capital gains up to that amount. That is the perfect tax bracket that we would all like to be in. So capital gains are a really good thing. It goes from there to 15%. Up to $479,000 now. Capital gains taxed at no more than 15%. After that, it's 20%. Those three brackets are the same as under the old law. Another thing that did not change is the net investment income tax that they tack on top of that if you have too much ordinary capital gains. So there's another 3.8% on top of it. I just tell you that so you won't think you got too much. The formula for income taxes has changed. The way you arrive at taxable income at income tax, you start with your gross income, you take out the deductions, some special deductions in arriving at adjusted gross income. All your business deductions come out in arriving at gross. From adjusted gross income, you deduct otherwise personal expenses. Itemized deductions, which are medical expenses, taxes, state and local taxes, charitable contributions, and you get the greater of standard or itemized, either or. Under the old law, you also got personal exemptions. On your 2017 returns, if you're filing a joint return, you get an exemption for you and your spouse. If you have dependent children, you get an amount for them. Those exemptions were worth $4,050 a piece. After 2017, there are no more deductions for personal exemptions. Zilch, nada. It's offset by this increase in the standard deduction for some folks. On the right, you'll see instead of personal and dependency exemptions, there's now a deduction for qualified business income from pass-through entities. Lauren will talk about that later. Qualified business income, the qualified business income deduction is for 20% of the of qualified income from business entities, and it's a really nice deduction. It's deductible in computing income tax, but not in computing if you're self-employed, not in computing what you pay for Social Security and Medicare. So it's only an income tax deduction. And then after you arrive at your income tax liability, instead of a child tax credit, which is a helpful thing for folks on lower income that have children, There's now a child and family credit, although for the lower incomes, they keep theirs. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Standard deduction amounts. You've heard about this, I'm sure. For a married couple filing joint, the standard deduction in 2017 is $12,700. If your itemized deductions are more than that, then you take the greater, whichever. In 2018, that standard deduction is almost doubled for a married couple filing joint, up to $24,000. If you're over 65, you get an extra $1,300 apiece. So a married couple over 65 for 2018 will get a standard deduction of $26,600. No personal exemptions, but you get that big increase in standard deductions. That will apply to a lot of people. So let's say, I'll give you a little example. Let's say that you normally have $10,000 that you pay in state and local taxes, either the Hall income tax and property taxes or sales tax and property taxes, and you also give $10,000 to charity. So for 2017, you would itemize deductions. You'd have a total of $20,000, and that's more than $12,700. What will you do in 2018? Take the standard deduction because it's more. So a strategy to consider is this. If you have $20,000 of deductions in 1 year, if you could time it where all those deductions for year one and year two, if you could put them all in 1 year, for instance, if you could pay your real estate taxes in January for the past year and in December for the coming year, if you could pay your charitable contributions all through the year and then prepay a year and get all those $20,000 in 2 years in 1 year, then you would take the standard deduction of $24,700 in 1 year and the itemized deductions of $40,000 in another. You would get an extra $16,000 of deductions by doing what's called bunching. Taking advantage of this really high standard deduction by putting your deductions with a little planning, a lot of folks can do that and further reduce their tax. But talk to a tax professional before you do anything crazy. The individual provisions, I'll go through these pretty quickly. Medical expenses, younger folks paid and could only deduct medical expenses in excess of 10% of their adjusted gross. Through 2019, it drops to 7.5%. State and local taxes are deductible. There's a lot of misinformation. Folks think that it's not deductible anymore. Absolutely it is. In the final law, state and local taxes are deductible up to $10,000. Sales tax in Tennessee, the Hall income tax, real estate taxes. Changes to home mortgage interest are significant. Under the old law, you could have $1 million of home mortgage debt acquired to buy, build, or improve a main home and a second home, up to $1 million, and plus $100,000 equity line of credit, and deduct all the interest. The equity line of credit did not have to be used to buy, build, or improve an existing home or a second home. The new law requires that it lowers the limit to $750,000, and the $750,000 includes a home equity line of credit. So if you have one, like many of us do, and you use it to buy a car, that is not to buy, build, or improve a residence. It makes the home equity line interest non-deductible. So there's still a tracing of what you use it for. There is a new tracing for home equity lines. They're not automatically deductible. The interest is not automatically deductible up to $100,000. Does that make sense? Yeah, it didn't to me either. So there's some changes here on charitable contributions. Again, we're on itemized deductions. The thing to notice here is that if you've been paying a university an amount for seating and parking, it's no longer deductible starting in 2018. I don't know what that's going to do to season tickets sales. Casualty and theft losses are no longer deductible unless you're in a federally declared disaster area. So I don't know how that will work out, but there was a high threshold for casualty losses anyway. Casualty and theft is 10% of your adjusted gross income. The overall limitation on itemized deductions has been the phase out. As your income went up, there was a reduction, an overall reduction, until at some point you had hardly anything left. That's been repealed. So there's something really interesting here. See the alimony received and paid bullet. For divorce agreements executed after December 31 of 2018, there will be no deduction for the party paying alimony and no income recognized by the party receiving alimony. So if you're contemplating something like that, you might want to speed it up or put it off depending on whose ox is being gored. I don't think I want to talk about that. I need to finish up here. I do want to talk about this, the kiddie tax rules. So children under age 19 are subject to special, and full-time students up through age 24 are subject to special tax rules. All the way up until now, they were taxed at the parents' rate if they had unearned income, which is interest and dividends, over a couple of $1,000. Starting in 2018, now they're taxed at the same rate as estates and trusts. And if you'll see, they get into the very highest bracket if they have unearned income, interest and dividends, if they have that over $12,500. So if you've been using income splitting with your children, that's just something to be aware of. The rates, the price of poker went up a lot on the kiddie tax. The individual mandate for the Obamacare shared responsibility payment is repealed, but not until 2019. It's a big deal. If you're moving and have moving expenses, they're not deductible to the employer or the employee anymore. They are compensation to an employee if an employer pays for it. And last on this slide is a pretty neat thing. The estate tax, the death tax, the federal death tax, the amount that can be passed on to your heirs has doubled. It's gone from it's a little over $11 million under current law, was through the end of 2017. Now it's $22.4 million, and it's transportable between both spouses. So a married couple can pass along $22.4 million and pay no death taxes. In Tennessee, the inheritance tax was repealed a few years back. So this is a good thing. It goes away. It's one of these temporary things. It reverts to the old law, goes back down to $11 million in 2026. But for those of you in that bracket, you probably should consult with an advisor and start giving your assets away. There's some provisions that are unchanged. The education credits, the student loan interest deduction, the exclusion on gain of a personal residence, $500,000 can be just not taxed. If you sell a personal residence, your primary residence that's been your primary residence for two out of the last 5 years, that's still there. Those other things there. The last thing I want to mention before I turn it over to Brian is 529 plans. So those are things that you take after-tax dollars and you put it into an account, and as long as it's up until now, up until 2018, if it were spent for higher education for any of a group of children, often grandchildren, grandparents would do this for their grandchildren, there's no tax on the earnings as long as it was spent for qualified higher education expenses. The new law allows those 529 plans to be used up to $10,000 a year for K through 12 education, either private or public. So I don't know anywhere where you pay $10,000 a year for public education, but it got included. And if you have a 529 plan or your child does, this is just something to be aware of. Okay, that's individuals. Brian?
Thanks, Steve. So just a couple of observations before I get going. The whole Tax Act was in the name of simplification, and I think as we go through these slides, you're like, I'm not seeing the simplification. There's a lot more complexity through here. So that's one observation. And then there's also winners and losers. So kind of in the broadening sense, at least when we look at the corporate and business provisions, for the lower rates, you give up expenses and deductions that you could have normally taken. So kind of keep that in mind as we go through. There we go. So kind of like you see with the individual rates, there were several brackets for corporations, and that's now all one flat 21%. So here's one of the few examples of simplification that we have one rate. So if you're a C corporation, there's a 21% tax, and that is now permanent. Another nice thing, unfortunately, they couldn't do this for the individuals, but for corporates, AMT is no longer. So no two calculations of income tax in the corporate world. We still have to do that in the individual world. If you have AMT credit carryovers from a prior year, those are allowed to be used to offset your tax liability. And there's some limits on that through 2021, but after that, you could use that in full. So that would be refundable after 2021. There's some refundability through 18 through 21, but that would all be back to you by the end of that time period. So that's a good provision there. Some changes to the dividends received deduction, but we won't go through that right now. One of the thoughts when the lawmakers made this act was that they felt like that a lot of S-corps would want to convert to C-corps to take advantage of the 21% rate. In contemplation of that, C-corps a lot of times have to use the accrual method of accounting versus the cash method of accounting. So they threw a provision in, as I see my slide didn't change, sorry about that. They threw a provision in to allow S-corps converting to C-corps to go to the cash method, or I'm sorry, if they have to go to the accrual method, there's usually an adjustment that's made over 4 years, and they've allowed you to do that over 6 years. So a little bit of relief on that one. Net operating losses, an interesting provision, carrybacks are eliminated. So beginning in 2018, you can only carry forward net operating losses. No more carrybacks. Also, when you are taxable again and are ready to use that net operating loss, it can only offset 80% of your taxable income. Maybe just my opinion, but it somehow feels like an alternative minimum tax. If you've been in losses, this is their way to get you to pay something instead of nothing until you've eaten up your net operating loss carryforwards. Several business provisions for deductions. There we go. We'll go through several of these in the next couple of slides, but the one I wanted to mention here that's not in a separate slide is the domestic production activities deduction. That has been repealed. That was the 9% deduction if you had qualifying manufacturing activities. So again, there's some losers to go with the 21% rate. Some things had to go away, and that was one of them. Entertainment expenses. So this is an interesting one. I'm sure a lot of businesses take clients out to, say, a Predators game. They go to dinner, go to Preds game. That would all be 50% deductible in the old world. through 17, we could enjoy that. 2018, that Preds game is no longer deductible. So the meal before, assuming you have legitimate business purposes and you need to document that, you could still deduct that to the 50% limitation, but the sporting event or other event after that that's purely entertainment would not be deductible anymore. $179 deduction. This has been broadened under the new law. The new limitation is $1 million. So as an incentive to have more businesses acquiring equipment and stimulate the economy, that was raised up to $1 million. Won't speak a whole lot on that otherwise. Bonus depreciation, likewise, has been expanded. There's now 100% bonus deduction. One of these items might be something you can take advantage of on your 2017 return. Any equipment bought post September 28th of 2017 is eligible, as long as it qualifies, for bonus depreciation in 2017. The biggest provision takeaway I have from this slide is used equipment is now eligible for bonus depreciation. So it actually is interesting to think if you went out and acquired a business, used assets, so it was very equipment heavy, you could now, in 2018, deduct those business assets with bonus depreciation, so you get immediate deduction for your investment. So that's a very nice benefit. But as many things, the government giveth and taketh away. So if that is your plan to go out and acquire a business and you leverage up with debt to do so, there are interest limitations that may come into play. If you have more than $25 million in gross receipts, this provision would apply to you. So if you're under $25 million for the preceding 3 years, you may not be limited on your interest, so that planning idea may still work. But you are limited to 30% of your adjusted taxable income, which in simple forms is basically your EBITDA through 2022, and then the depreciation amounts drop off from that calculation afterwards. So again, I think it's a benefit that the government is saying, hey, go out and buy equipment, we'll give you the deduction now. However, if you go out and incur debt to obtain that equipment, we're not going to give you the interest deduction. So that's kind of the play with that. Several items on this slide. The one I want to point out here is the like-kind exchange treatment. So like-kind exchange has been eliminated for everything except real property. Probably makes sense if you think about what everything else has been changed. If you have equipment, if you're in equipment rentals or some car rentals, something like that, where you would do a lot of like-kind exchange on your equipment, the thought is, you know, fully depreciated, you trade it in, you know, potentially have a gain there that you would defer through like-kind exchange purpose. So that went away, but the flip is that you have 100% bonus depreciation, at least through 2022, before the phase-out goes back down to 50, that would offset that. So, again, there's some play you could do right now with that as well. Small business accounting changes. A few things here that are favorable to taxpayers. So the limit was raised from $10 million to $25 million, and again, that's defined as your income for the three preceding years, your gross receipts for the three preceding years. If it's below $25 million, you're no longer required to use the accrual method, which is nice. Cash basis normally gives you a nice deferral of income. For us tax accountants, the third bullet point there, the uniform capitalization rules no longer apply. That's a big hairy calculation that normally results in very little change, but it's something we have to do. So personally, I'm glad that one's gone. Trying to see, that's probably everything there. And I think with that, we'll turn it over to Lauren, and she will go through the qualified business income.
Lauren,
excuse
me. So there have been some questions that we've had about the business deduction, Section 179 versus that bonus depreciation, 100% write-off. Section 179 is 100% write-off. There's a big difference in Tennessee on which one you use. If you're a corporation or an LLC, you have to file a franchise and excise tax return with the state of Tennessee and pay a tax on an excise tax, an income tax on your on that entity's income at 6.5%. If you can use Section 179 deduction, Tennessee recognizes that. If you use bonus depreciation, Tennessee does not recognize that. So if you have a choice between Section 179 and bonus, in Tennessee, for an LLC or a corporation, you'd prefer Section 179. But consult your tax advisor.
Okay, I'm going to try to make this qualified business income deduction as simple as possible in explanation today. There are a lot of technicalities that surround this, but basically the purpose of this deduction is to bring pass-through entity income to a rate that is more comparable to the new corporate rate of 21%. So what they've done is given non-corporate taxpayers that are receiving allocations from pass-through entities, which are defined as S-corporations, partnerships, sole proprietorships, a 20% deduction of your qualified business income. This deduction, as Steve mentioned earlier, is a below-the-line deduction, so it reduces your taxable income rather than your adjusted gross income. So it's going to reduce after the standard deduction or the itemized deduction, whichever you're taking. Your qualified business income is defined there as your net amount of income, gain, deduction, or loss from your trade or business. And it has to be connected to United States income. So foreign income is not included in this. And then it also does not include any short-term or long-term capital gains, dividend income, or interest income, investment earnings. And trust and estates, I don't think I mentioned those earlier, they are eligible to take the deduction as well. Okay, in determining what amount you get to take for your deduction, there is a basic formula, and again, this formula can get pretty hairy, so I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. It is the lesser of 120% of your qualified business income, or two, the greater of two scenarios, either 50% of your W-2 wages, or 25% of your W-2 wages plus 2.5% for a capital piece there. If you own property and it's qualified property, the adjusted basis of that. So 25% of your wages plus 2.5% of your property. The wages is what's paid to your employees and reported on your quarterly payroll tax returns. And then those, the second piece there, the greater of the 50% or 25%, only comes into play over a certain threshold amount. So for individuals that are married filing joint returns, you don't have to worry about that second piece of the how to calculate your deduction unless you make $315,000 or more, have $315,000 or more of taxable income. So for any pass-through entity, S-corp, partnership, sole proprietorship, if you're married filing jointly and your taxable income is under $315,000, you would calculate your deduction as 20% of your qualified business income. Get my finger out of the way there and it'll work, sorry. Qualified property for the 25% of W-2 wages plus the 2.5% of your business property. The qualified property definition there is any tangible property that's subject to depreciation. You have to hold that property at the end of the tax year and it has to be used in your business during the year that you're taking your QBI deduction. There is a caveat to what is qualified trader business, and there are certain service trades, professional trades, that are subject to special thresholds and exemption amounts. And those service trades or businesses are defined on this slide. So if you are in the business professional services, you provide accounting services, actuarial sciences, athletics, financial services, consulting, health, law, performing arts, there is some special considerations to take in when you are calculating your QPI. So if you are a service, professional service business, and again, your income, taxable income, is under $315,000, you can still take the 20% of your QBI deduction. And then there is a phase out, a complete phase out. So between $315,000 and $415,000 for married filing joint taxpayers, you would lose the ability to take the QBI deduction completely once you reach $415,000, where other businesses that are not defined as service trades or businesses can continue to take the QBI deduction. And I think that slide there basically just says what I said. So once you reach the 415 as a service organization, you're phased out completely. Whoops, too quick. Sorry, guys. So the big takeaway, I think, here is what happens between $315,000 in taxable income and $415,000 of taxable income. Again, if you're under $315,000, you calculate your QBI deduction at 20% of your qualified business income. If you are a non-service business between $315,000 and $415,000, you phase in the second calculation there where you have to determine which is less, the 20% of your QBI or the 50% of your W-2 wages or the 25% of W-2 wages with the capital piece. For a service QBI, there is also an additional step that they apply between 315 and 415. So first, there is a pro rata phase out of the deduction. So for every $2,500 that you earn over taxable income that you have over 315, the 20% is reduced by 1%. So if you had $50,000 additional income, you are sitting at $365,000 of taxable income, your QBI is reduced to 10%. And then again, if you get all the way up to the 415 limit, your QBI deduction is reduced to 0. And then you can't take the deduction any further past 415. It's about as technical and as complicated as they can make it for you. And I think that is it in a nutshell for qualified business income. I think we've got a few tax planning consideration points to note, and then I think Brian's going to open it up for some question and answers.
So why don't we just open it up for questions right now? We love this stuff, and we could talk about it forever. And we make a really nice living doing this, but what are your questions? Do you have specific things you want us to answer for you?
If you'll raise your hand, I'll come around with the microphone so everybody can hear.
This is for Lauren on the QBI. You specifically mentioned S-Corps partnerships and sole proprietorships, but that would include LLCs as well, wouldn't it?
Correct. Yes. LLCs are included.
Microphone.
Yes. Correct. Sorry. I forget. I have three kids at home, so I can scream really loud if I need to, but I can use the microphone too.
Any other questions? Thank you, Beth, for making me walk all the way across.
I just have a question about the home equity interest for home repairs for homes or second homes. So I guess, assuming that the balance is not paid down, how do you prove out year over year that that's a deductible interest payment? Because if, you know, for repairs that you made in 2018 to your home, you're carrying the balance over year, do you get to deduct the full interest, or is it only a certain amount paid over the year? What, how does that work?
It's a really good question. If that home equity line is paid down, then if you add back to it, that is not qualified home equity indebtedness, even though it's secured by your home. So under the new law, that would not be deductible interest unless you did an improvement to one of those homes, either the first or second home. That also applies to the first mortgage. When it's paid down, you can't go back and borrow more and get your equity out and get 100% deduction. Who it's left up to, the regs, I guess, will probably try to impose it on Pinnacle and other lenders to try to figure that out. But ultimately, right now, all we know is that the taxpayer is responsible for that.
All right. My question is regarding to the, if you have an LLC and you're a pass-through entity and you wanted to convert over to a C corp because to take advantage of the lower tax rate, is there a particular formula or there's a break-even or a threshold that you decide, do I need to continue as an LLC or do I switch over to a corporation to get the reduction in taxes? Because as she mentioned that the once you get to the 315, the phase out, you start benefiting from the reduction in the tax.
Great question. Here's a slide that we have. You know, there's a lot of considerations to think about when you're wanting to convert from a S or an LLC to a C. The 21% rate seems great, but depending on where you are on your individual marginal rate and the 20% deduction, you may come out about the same. You may come out better. You may be less favorable. Again, you hate to say it all depends, but unfortunately it's one of those situations that all depends. Kind of as a firm, what we're thinking is most companies probably will not convert to C-Corps, that probably the LLC format is probably going to be more beneficial to most taxpayers, but until you run the numbers, it depends. So I wish I could give you a better answer. Kind of along with that, before you get in there, I mean, there's many, you know, just thoughts about that too. You know, are you going to leave money in the company? Are you wanting to take it out? So, you know, there's just so many variables. It's just hard to answer in a setting like this, but hopefully this slide will give you some just items to think about.
I will check with my personal tax advisor, but I'm 67, trying to decide whether I start Social Security payments. I've got IRA funds that can be dispersed. We're looking at the individual tax aspects of this expiring. What are some parameters that I should pay attention to in making these decisions?
Well, that's another really good question. Let me ask you one, and I can give you a definitive answer. How long are you going to live?
95.
Then I will give you a definitive answer. Do not start taking your Social Security until you're 70. It goes up 8% a year. If you don't need the money and you're going to live a long time, that's a real nice return on investment. So putting off starting your Social Security is a good idea. You have to start taking required minimum distributions from your retirement at age 70 and a half, unless you're still working and active in the business where the retirement plan is. So that can be deferred too. In our world, it always seems like a good idea to defer the tax, even though some of these provisions expire. Because as long as you've got it, there's a hope at least that you might be able to keep part of it. And once it's paid in taxes, you know, you have to rely on the government to give you goods and services back. Is that any help?
See a couple more hands go up.
I just want to be clear about something. When you were talking about taking the 20%, you were talking about taking it off of your taxes. Was that before or after gross adjusted income? Is it a tax credit? Could you go back through that a little bit? Because if you have more than one source of income, like say you take W-2s from a C-Corp,
mm-hmm.
but you have an LLC, and you take an income from that LLC, and you're taking all of that to your personal return, when does the QBI come off?
Yes. So it is a deduction, and I was going to go back to Steve's slide that shows the calculation of your new, how you arrive at your new tax base now. But it is a deduction, and it reduces your total taxable income. So you have your gross income on the 2018 column, less your deductions to arrive at your adjusted gross. And then you would take your standard deduction or itemized deduction. Then you would take your QBI deduction. So it's not a credit. It just reduces your total taxable income. Is it stuck there?
Got another question?
That answer your question?
And we can distribute these slide materials. I think Brian might mention that later, but
yeah. If you'll look in your email in the next day or so, we're actually going to send you a quick little survey, about a 3 or 4 question survey. And on that, it will say, would you like to receive the slides? And if you respond yes, then we will send that to you via email.
Would Schedule E income, primarily from real estate, would that be considered a qualified QBI? And is it subject to an income cap?
And is it subject, what was the last piece of the question?
To an income cap. You know, does it phase out at 415?
My opinion is yes, that it would qualify as QBI income under Schedule E and be subject to the same caps, the 315 limit thresholds, et cetera, that were mentioned earlier.
I don't recall an exclusion for that at this point, so. As everything, you know, the regulations have not been issued, so this is still pretty fluid. So what's good today may not be tomorrow.
You mentioned like-kind exchanges are going away except for real property. So 1031s would be allowed, but 1035s are phasing out, like for insurance and annuities, those types.
That's probably, gotcha, yeah. So 1031 equipment, it's got to be real estate.
Okay.
That building for building, land for land, that's still good, but equipment, you go to trade in a car on another vehicle, that's no longer eligible.
So you mentioned that at the corporate level, but on the individual level, so 1035s are still good?
That applies for everyone.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Hello. I have a small business sub-S corporation and LLC. Is it change in income tax from IRS federal tax? Because now we are not paying any taxes to the federal tax, only the Tennessee franchise and excise tax. And those coming to the individual as a K-1, if you know that. Is there anything changed there too?
Generally speaking, no. If you're still a flow-through entity, that will still flow through to you to your personal return, and that's where you would calculate your tax.
Nothing changed. You're sub-S and LLC, right?
Correct. You know, kind of general, the way it flows stays the same. Obviously, you know, there could be business deductions that are no longer deductible, so you have more income flowing to you, but generally speaking, it's still the same.
And that don't apply to state of Tennessee franchise and excise taxes. This remains same, right?
Yes, Tennessee stays the same.
Correct. Okay, thank you.
Paul, on the 1031 exchange, is that real estate only, is that a permanent change or is it temporary?
You've stumped me. I don't know. But we'll find out and let you know.
Okay.
Sorry.
Any other questions?
No, there is a 1035 exchange for the insurance. Is that still same or is it going to be paid?
We didn't understand the question.
1035 exchange, like a 1031 exchange, that's for the business. 1035, that's for the insurance company. You know, if we change one insurance to the another insurance company, like a life insurance, is that the same thing or they change too?
I don't think those rules changed moving insurance policies, but I'd have to confirm.
Was there a change to the treatment of per diem on either the individual or the corporate side?
Oh, you bet. Yeah, I sort of skipped over that. There's no longer any deduction for an employee for their unreimbursed business expenses. That's been completely eliminated. So per diems would be included in your taxable income, and you would have no opportunity as an employee to deduct the expenses that those per diems are given to you for. There's a good fix for that. If you account to your employer for your actual expenses and get reimbursed for those, that is not included in your gross income, and the employer can fully deduct it. It's those unreimbursed expenses that are now a really bad thing. Along with the fact that you can't deduct tax preparation fees anymore. I think that's disgusting.
I have one more question. You know, in business, in SOBAS and LLC, we have NOL, not allow losses. Is that we can carry on further, or we can go after 2018? Because usually we carry forward for the NOL.
So S-Corps and LLCs don't have federal NOLs. You might have suspended losses for another reason, basis limitations or things like that. A state NOL you very well could have. It would carry forward. The state law has not changed on that. What you can't carry back are C corporation or individual net operating losses to prior years. With the expensing provisions, it is possible to generate large losses by buying equipment. They're not going to let you take those losses back and get a refund from under the old law.
I know, but they came in K-1, and K-1 we have NOL too, and a personal income tax, and still we carry on that NOL until we finish it, or after 2017, there is no more we can carry on, not allowed losses, NOL.
So nothing changes about NOLs except you can't carry them back after even 2017 NOL you can carry back. But you can't carry them back after 2018. They can only be carried forward. Otherwise, the rules for computing NOLs are exactly the same.
Any other questions?
Not sure we're totally clear yet. On the corporate side, meal allowances, are they still deductible?
No, not really. So meal allowances are not, they're taxable compensation now to the employee. Employer provided meals for the convenience of the employer where you have events like for your employees and things like that. Those used to be 100% deductible, now only 50% deductible. But to deduct a meal allowance where the employee does not account to you for their actual expenses, it has to be included in the employee's W-2 gross wages.
Does that include DOT?
Yeah, I believe it does. Department of Transportation. They get a special rule.
Any other questions? Ms. Buchanan, you have a question?
Back on the standard deduction, the $24,000 for married filing jointly, and you get an extra $1,300 if you're over 65. Do both taxpayers, husband and wife, for instance, have to be 65 to get the, or is it $1,300 per person who is 65 or older?
That's a good question, Karen. Look it up on TurboTax.
I will.
No, if only one spouse is over 65, then you get $1,300. If both, it's $1,300 for each.
That's what I wanted.
Any other questions? Going once, going twice. Oh.
Is the sale of commercial property treated different from a home in a sale, the profits from it?
Is the sale of commercial property taxed differently than the sale of a personal residence?
Yes.
Yes, it is. There is no $500,000 exclusion on the sale of commercial property. On a primary residence, you can exclude up to $500,000 of gain and pay no tax. On a piece of commercial property, you're taxed from the first dollar of gain. So yeah, there's a big difference. Yeah, 1% a year, it's what for 2017, paying 4%, it'd be 3% in 2018, goes to zero, I believe, in 2021.
Other questions?
So given the overall changes, are there some specific areas of planning that little windows that you see where there might be opportunity for somebody to do something? Like if you have an NOI where you can't carry it over, are people converting to Roths with no tax implications or something like that? Are there windows where you go, this is going to be, you know, benefit a lot of people if we can get this little peek in this window, if that makes any sense?
You got a magic bullet, guys?
I thought you had one.
Steve has that.
Yeah, it all depends on your income. It all depends on your income. So there's lots of things that you can do to take advantage of the new brackets. There are a number of things. If you have some control over when you receive income and when you incur deductions, there are really a lot of planning opportunities. But for one size that fits all, I would say just be thankful you're paying less tax right now. That's the first one. And almost everybody is paying less tax. Almost everybody. Not everybody, but almost everybody. And then depending on, the rest of them are pretty fact dependent. So it depends on where your income is and so on. But it's still a good idea to defer tax, I think, by using a retirement plan to put that money away and let it grow tax-free. IRAs are good things if you are able to do that. So the traditional planning tools are all still good ideas, I think. And then there are some new ones. This is like on Christmas morning, you go down and under the tree, there are a bunch of presents, and you don't know which one to open first. There are a lot of really good things for taxpayers in this law. And so you have to open them a package at a time and see if you like them or not.
Let's give a big hand to Steve, Paul, and Lauren. We do thank y'all for coming out and enjoying lunch. You can hang around for a few minutes and talk to each other. We Learning is one of the seven values we have at Pinnacle, and we enjoy learning, and we want to try to help you all learn as much as we can. So we want to partner with you in that way. So we're thankful for Blankenship Group for coming out and spending some time with us to impart their knowledge. Hope it was helpful to you all, and hope you all have a great day. Thanks.